Sha.
Hi, this is Sharanya, and you're listening to Nerdum Say, a podcast where two girls with an overactive imagination take on a geeky journey through fiction.
We're really excited to welcome you to this first episode. If you have not listened to our introductory episode, please do so now, because we explain what this podcast is about.
So basically, we're two girls who grew up immersed in every possible way in the whole nerd geek kind of culture. And we kind of wanted a podcast where we can discuss the wealth and diversity of knowledge that obviously can't be used for any other purpose. And that's what podcasts are for, right? That's why people start podcasts. So for today's episode, we'll be delving into one of our all-time favorite books. We both have our mugs here, and you can see the background that I'm using. So we're going to do drum rolls in case you're not sure and you're not familiar with this world. It's Harry Potter.
Hey, I actually have Gryffindor everythings. I have Gryffindor socks. I thought I should put on a pin or badge, then I decided, you know, this is nerdy enough. Why not? Let's leave that out for now. So anyway, today's episode, it'll be a discussion that sort of mirrors a debate where Sharanya will bring up some points about the topic that we will let you know in a bit. And I'll try to counter some of those arguments. And we'll basically be discussing two characters from this book.
Yep. And, you know, while we're doing all of that, we're both extreme tea enthusiasts or self-proclaimed tea enthusiasts. So we're also going to be, I guess every episode will probably be drinking some tea. It's very cold where I am. I'm in Sydney right now. So I'm doing a hot English breakfast tea. I don't know why I lifted my mug as if you would be able to tell what tea I'm drinking from this. But yeah, I'm drinking a pretty standard English breakfast tea. What about you?
It's not pretentious, but nerdy grip Hogwarts Crest mug, I'm drinking rose with French vanilla.
So she's obviously the one with a job. I'm obviously the one on a student budget.
Okay. Your mug, I just noticed, well, even though we can't see most of it now, I saw the footprints that looks like it's from the Marauders map.
Yes. And so this podcast is becoming about tea and mugs now. But when I put hot water into it, like the map comes up. And it also says, well, I can't remember exactly what it says, but it talks about, you know, the paragraph that comes up on the Marauders map, Messrs. Yeah, exactly. But the Marauders map comes up over here, where the wordings right now say, I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Your mug just disappeared for a while. So it was kind of cool. Because it's kind of what happens when Harry puts on the invisibility cloak.
Yeah. That's exactly why I got this virtual background. So I can disappear.
All right. Okay. Now that we're done talking about tea, not what this is about. Before that, since we're talking about Harry Potter and we're obviously big Potterheads, I want to ask you, what is your house?
So,
deep inhale.
Deep inhale.
Therapy, but okay.
Yes. Yeah, man, this is like a whole therapy session. But I did get Gryffindor originally and several times after. But I did try it a couple of times.
How many times do you take the test?
I take the test, you know, in different moods and different when I'm in a different mental space, because sometimes I feel very, like, personally, I have my Slytherin moments and I have my like Ravenclaw moments. Not in a racist way, obviously, but I do have my Slytherin moments where I can get a little judgy at times and come off a little snobbish.
All right, now that we're setting the pace for what Slytherins are like.
Yeah, and I can be a little, you know, not always very Gryffindor in like two, like head first, eyes closed kind of way that Gryffindors can often be. You know, they're a little...
There's no reason for me to go back to I am her, and I know, like, even though these days I kind of identify, I feel like I would be a Griffin Puff because I feel a lot of Hufflepuff tendencies. And also, like, my friend recently took the test and I was looking over her shoulder. I had the same answers as she did, and she is a Hufflepuff. So it makes sense that you sort of grow, you know, out of your personality after, or, like, you know, become different.
Yeah.
I'm a Griffin Puff, so.
So now that we've wasted more time on this, let's talk about today's episode. Okay, so in today's episode, we'll be doing a comparison between Draco Malfoy and Luna Lovegood. And this is something that came up while we were discussing, like, the characters. And obviously, you can see that our podcast is fairly, you know, heavily dependent on Luna Lovegood's image, because we do love her. But yeah, like, I personally believe that there are quite a few parallels that we can draw between both of them. Sha, on the other hand, is a little skeptical and probably doesn't want to put them under the same bracket, with good reason, because, like, Luna Lovegood is a goddess and Draco Malfoy is, well, he has his moments. So what we're going to do is Sha's going to give a brief overview of the characters, just so that we're all on the same page, especially for people who aren't, you know, huge nerds like us, because we do want to keep this space open and available to, you know, other fandoms, because we're not just going to be doing Harry Potter, and also people that want to get an idea of nerd culture. So Sha's going to give us a brief overview of the characters, and then we'll go into the whole, are they similar, are they not similar, and then we'll have some bonus content as well.
All right, so I actually took out the passage from what J.K. Rowling has written on Wizarding World that was originally Pottermore about Draco Malfoy, and also just like a short summary about who Luna Lovegood is for people that don't know her, because what have you been doing with your life until now? How can you not know about Luna Lovegood? She's like the best person out there. Okay, sorry. Anyway, so I'm just going to read a little bit from that passage. And here we go. So Draco was raised in an atmosphere of regret that the Dark Lord had not succeeded in taking command of the Wizarding community, although he was prudently reminded that such sentiments ought not to be expressed outside the small circle of his family and their close friends, or Daddy might get into trouble. And in childhood, Draco associated mainly with the pureblood children of his father's ex-Death Eater cronies. So we can already see, since he was a kid, he is already a big old racist. Like every other child of Harry Potter's age, Draco did hear stories about the boy who lived, and the fact that he had been removed from Wizarding community seemed to support this view, and Draco's father, Lucius Malfoy, was one of those who subscribed to the theory that Harry most likely had powers that Voldemort didn't have, which is why it brought upon his downfall. And it was comforting to think that he, Lucius, might be in for a second chance of world domination should this Potter boy prove to be another greater pureblood champion. Again, more reasons for them to bolster their pureblood bullshit. Mm-hmm. Right, so it was therefore in the knowledge that he was not doing anything that his father would disapprove, and in the hope that he might be able to relay some interesting news home, that Draco Malfoy offered Harry Potter his hand when he realized who he was at the Hogwarts Express. Much of Draco's behavior at school was modeled on the most impressive person he knew, which was his father, and he faithfully copied Lucius's cold and contemptuous manner to everyone outside his inner circle. After Voldemort's resurrection, Draco was thrilled by the secret knowledge that he had returned, and that his father had always described the family's glory days were back once more. He was cheered, imagining Voldemort's triumph, seeing his family honored under a new regime, and he himself fitted at Hogwarts as the important and impressive son of Voldemort's second in command. Not getting better for Draco right here.
Really not.
However, at the moment of triumph, when Draco had cornered Harry and his comrades, I think it's that bit where he discovers that they are practicing defense against the dark arts, right? and it seemed that Harry must be expelled by Umbridge, Harry slipped through his fingers. Worse still, Harry managed to thwart Lucius Malfoy's attempt to kill him, and Draco's father was captured and sent to Azkaban. So Draco's world now fell apart. From having been, as he and his father had believed, on the cusp of authority and prestige, such as that never known before, Drake, his father, was taken from his family home and imprisoned far away in the fearsome Wizard prison, guarded by Dementors. Lucius had been Draco's role model and hero since birth. Now, since he and his mother were outcasts among the Death Eaters, Lucius was a failure and discredited in the eyes of the fierce Lord Voldemort. So, I'm just going to stop here and ask you, what do you think about Draco up till now? Or at least, like, you know, what do you think of Draco when you were first reading the series?
So, I mean, the first time I was reading the series, it's obviously, as kids, you have this concept that everything's black and white. So in that sense, Draco is a very, like, you know, he's a baddie, he's the villain, or he's one of the villains, even if he's like the lesser villain. But definitely, you know, as a kid, you don't think too much about, like, oh, what was his upbringing like, and who are the people that he had as role models, and culture is such a big part of, you know, making the person. And it's probably not just his parents, it's also the company that he kept, because he was probably also only exposed to purebloods. Of course, like, you could argue that Sirius was also probably brought up in a very similar kind of environment, but he rebelled. But again, I mean, he probably had different circumstances. You know, he hung out with Remus Lupin and James Potter, and they were different in their own ways. So yeah, I mean, Draco, first reading of Draco, obviously not the biggest fan. Later readings of Draco, I'm still not the biggest fan, but I do understand him a little bit better.
Yeah. I do think a lot of the hype surrounding Draco, like, you know, how girls tend to idolize him, is given that he is played by Tom Felton.
Yeah.
I think they tend to, like, you know, the lines get a little blurred in that sense. But when I first read about Draco, he just came off as this typical bully, like, you meet at school. I hated him. And you only see a little bit of depth, like, later on when you find out that he can't bring himself to kill Dumbledore. And he, even, like, at that point when Harry, Ron, and Hermione end up at Malfoy Manor, and he almost deliberately lies that it's Harry Potter, but it's clearly Harry.
So yeah,
that's when, like, I sort of, you know, I resented him a little less, I'd say. Because after that, he immediately becomes garbage again. He still tries to bring him. So it's just like, what's this guy doing? Like, where are your values and your morals? Why is it so confusing? So
also, where does your loyalty lie?
What do you want? Even this, I think the same can be said with Lucius Narcissa. Why are you going back and forth? Like, but, you know, that's not what makes sense, because I think they expected just to be at the top, and they didn't face so much of retribution. So that makes a little more sense. Like, Draco, what the hell are you doing, kid? Like, pick a side. Come on. Especially at the end. But anyway, I digress. Yeah. So, moving on to Luna Lovegood, a much better character.
A much better person.
Yeah, much better person. And one that I identify with, very obviously. Look at my glasses. I'll say more. So, Luna Lovegood is the only child of Xenophilius Lovegood and Pandora Lovegood. I'm just going to pause there to take in the fact that her mom's called Pandora. Maybe say more about how she turned out. Anyway, her mother accidentally died when experimenting with spells when Luna was 9, and she was raised by her father, editor of the magazine The Quibbler, and lived in a rook-like house near the village of Otreys and Catchpole in Devon. Luna was sorted into Ravenclaw House, and because of her father's political dissidence during Voldemort's rise to power, she was abducted by the Death Eaters to be held ransom and imprisoned in the dungeons of the Malfoy Manor for months. She was freed by Dobby, and she returned to Hogwarts to participate in the final battle during the Second Wizarding War. So pleasant. Like, why can't everyone be like this?
Yeah.
But did you like Luna when you first read about her?
Oh, for sure. Like, I really related to her as someone who is, like, I mean, in high school, if people in high school are listening, please don't, you know, Don't fault me on this. But I mean, I did feel like I was on the quirky side a little bit. And it's just, you know, it's she's a good character. She has a lot of depth. She's very complex, but she's also like got the purest heart.
Yes.
And she's just, oh my God. She's just like this amazing person.
But yeah, I get what you're saying. In fact, when I first read about Luna, even in the first line, when Harry describes her as being dotty, like that instantly pissed me off because I really, really relate to her. And like, I was that kid in high school who had like vegetable and fruit earrings, multicolored everything, and people did look at me as weird. So, but like reading it from Harry's perspective, like, you know, that initial few months before they became friends with her, they just thought she was weird and like insane. That really pissed me off. I'm like, she's so pure. How can you not see how pure she is?
Yeah.
Even though she's weird, but you know, it works out in the end.
Yeah, I was the same in primary school. I used to wear like these floral pants and like these very colorful, and I love floral patterns. Okay, like even now, if I see something floral, I'm like, I need that.
It totally makes sense why we are friends.
Yeah, and also because we're related by blood. But it was something that I know I was definitely made fun of because of like, you know, the whole weird clothes and weird styling and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to the points that we're going to discuss today. So what do you have, Sharanya? Hit me.
Okay, so the first thing might come across a little Freudian, but we're gonna, you know,
right here,
we're gonna blow past it. But no, it's an important point, and I think it's the most probably the thing that has the highest connection between both of them, is the fact that they both worship their father so much. And it may be for two completely different reasons, but the way they both worship their fathers and look up to their fathers, because Draco, I mean, they both think the word of their father is like the gospel truth, and like, you can see it in Luna's tendencies of believing in creatures that her father tells her about. Similarly, like Draco also talks about things that his father tells him, and they believe anything outside of what their fathers tell them is invalid or untrue or not valuable. So I feel like that's kind of an important similarity between the two, and that's the first thing I noticed about them. And that's probably why we're talking about comparisons between them to begin with.
Right.
What do you think?
That makes sense. But I do think there's a slight difference in that. So Draco idolizes his father. I think like he sees himself becoming Lucius as an adult, you know, living the same way. He pairs his beliefs because he sees, like, he's able to see all those things in himself as well. He carries himself the same way, which, not to say that Luna doesn't, but so, like, with Luna, I think it's because, like, the main reason that she parrots her dad's beliefs, and she also, to some extent, carries herself the way he does because her mom died at the age of 9. So, she, like, her only attachment figure now is her father. And so, I don't know if, like, she unconsciously took on his quirkiness, but they have the same dressing style. They're both kind of like messy in the way they appear, slightly unkempt. So I think a big factor that's because her mom died, so she's attached to her father. Not to get too psychological about this, but like when you talk about attachment theories, like her mom died when she was 9, meaning that Luna has already like you know, securely attached to her attachment figures. She's like developed trust and blah blah. So, and even when her mom died, like she was 9, she can understand, she's at an age where she can comprehend what death is. So I think like it's more of a, like, now the only one I have left is my father. So she just like adopts a lot of his tendencies and his beliefs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much, I think, because like it's the only connection that she has to like a surviving family member. So in that way, it's definitely different from Draco.
That's true. And also, I guess, to add on to what you just said about attachment, I guess so they don't go too much into like what kids do before entering Hogwarts, but I guess they're probably spending most of their time with their families. And I mean, I can't say much about Draco because he probably did spend time with other Death Eater families, but Luna probably didn't spend time with anyone else apart from her father, or maybe not so much time apart from her father.
That's actually, so that's really interesting that you brought that up, because that's the thing that I always thought about. So Luna lives really near the Weasleys and also the Diggory, but you never hear about them, like, you know, meeting up or even bringing friends outside of school.
Yeah.
So moving back right to your next point.
So the second point of comparison is that technically both Draco and Luna were amongst the first, at least Hogwarts students, who believed Harry Potter when he said Voldemort was back. Even if it was for two completely different reasons, and even if it was like one of them was based on fact, surprisingly Draco, and actually not very surprising, and Luna's was based completely on belief, which, you know, love her for that. But yeah, the fact is that both of them were the first amongst many of the students, or most of the students in Hogwarts, who believed Harry Potter. Draco probably because his father actually did know and would have told him. And I'm not sure about how the other Death Eater kids, whether they were told by their parents or not. It didn't seem like they were very aware, not as aware as Draco. But then again, we're basing this on Crabbe and Goyle, so really, like, who knows? but on Luna's side, it just shows, she did believe, she was amongst the first to believe, even before Seamus and... Well, Ron did believe him, but it did take a while to, you know, come around to it. Whereas Luna was just blind faith, you know, she should be a Gryffindor. Like, sometimes I think she should be a Gryffindor, you know, eyes closed, head first. but yeah, she was amongst the first to believe Harry when he said Voldemort is back.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, like, the differences there. Well, I suppose, like, in Draco's account, it's like just evidence, isn't there? Like, the father knows about it. That's just concrete evidence right there. Like, that's his reason to believe the truth, because he knows it's true. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Luna, she is a trusting person, like what you said. So, but there's, like, it's not, like, at that point, most of the Wizarding World, like, a lot of them are sort of aware that Voldemort is gonna come back. No one actually really believes that he's completely gone for good, even though a lot of people chose to pretend not to believe. Yeah. So, but that sort of brings up a very interesting question. What do you think, you know, it looked like when Harry came out of the third task, carrying Cedric's body, saying that Voldemort is back? Like, what did that look like to the rest of the people who weren't, like, Dumbledore, or, you know, like, important people who had been keeping track of Voldemort's movements? What do you think that looked like?
I mean, it honestly, I'm surprised they didn't go more into this, but it would have come across as, you know, very shady, that in this competition, his main competitor dies. And he's so conveniently pinning it on Voldemort with no proof, no evidence. And I mean, it would have been so easy. And not that the ministry didn't do a good job of, like, trashing Harry's image, but it would have been easy to, like, just go one step further and say he's a murderer and do what they did to Sirius, in fact.
Yeah.
And just lock him up for it.
Yeah, I know. I wish that part was, like, I wish they'd covered more of that, but it made sense why she didn't. Also, like, I always wonder why didn't Dumbledore, like, try to, you know, talk to them, like, talk to the ministry a little bit more, use your pensieve,
like,
unless that's not possible. So I'm not so sure. I wish that part, like, we knew more about that. But bring this back to, like, Luna's belief in Harry when he said Voldemort's back. Something that's, like, interesting is, I think I read before, J.K. Rowling had said that Luna is the anti-Hermione in a way that Hermione is very logical and inflexible, but she believes things if there's basis for the belief that it exists. Mm-hmm. Whereas Luna is just quite airy-fairy. And she's more likely to believe like impossible things than anyone else. So it's highly likely that that's also why Luna very easily believed Harry.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, yeah. So like for completely different reasons, Luna's a good friend. Draco's trash.
Right.
But yeah, so that takes us to point number three, which is the fact that both Draco and Luna, again, this is particularly important, that they were on different sides, right? Draco was on the side of Lord Voldemort and Luna was on the side of Harry Potter. And despite the fact that they were on two different sides, they were both punished and, you know, they were suffering because Harry wasn't delivered to Voldemort. Not just the fact that he wasn't dead, because Voldemort did want to sort of be the one to kill him in a sense. But yeah, the fact that Harry wasn't delivered to him caused suffering to both of them. Luna was kidnapped and kept in Malfoy Manor. And Draco was basically asked to kill Dumbledore, which, I mean, that's insane.
Yeah. Although the difference there is that, so Draco was punished for Lucius's mistake because he was supposed to get the prophecy. Was he supposed to kill Harry right there at the Department of Mysteries?
So he was supposed to get the prophecy. And the thing is, I feel like Voldemort never wanted anyone else to kill Harry Potter. He wanted to be the one that killed Harry Potter, but he wanted him to be delivered to him.
Right.
So that he could kill Harry Potter.
Yeah. I don't get a lot of Voldemort's like plan of action. Mm-hmm. It's like, want this boy so much. You know where he is. You literally know where he is. And if you claim to be so powerful, what the hell are all these side plots and, you know, like devices and means to get him? Like, go get him, that's what you want so much, right?
So
that was why Draco was punished, because of Lucius's failure, and mm-hmm. he pretty much botched up that entire mission. But yeah. Luna, it was more like, because so Xenophilius was blatantly supporting Harry and not conforming to the, you know, new regimen. Mm-hmm. So she was just pretty much a pawn. Like, they just wanted to threaten him, mm-hmm. And to make him stop. And so that's why they captured her. But so here's an interesting question. Do you notice like a connection between Luna and her dad with another character in fiction? Someone else who negotiated her freedom, her father's freedom, because he did something wrong.
Ooh, yes. I think I know where you're going with this. Beauty and the Beast, right?
So that was a pretty interesting connection. And also, like, after she's taken captive, like, her dad gets, like, deathly ill, right? I mean, I'm talking about Belle.
Yeah.
And you can see that Xenophilius is also, like, almost driven to madness because mm-hmm. he doesn't have Luna. He doesn't know where she is, mm-hmm. Or what's happening to her. So, but that brings up an interesting question. Why was she sent to Malfoy Manor? Why was she not killed or sent to Azkaban? What do you think?
Yeah, so I think, like, we did sort of briefly touch on this a little bit. There is the fact that Luna is a pureblood as well.
Right.
I mean, the Lovegoods, not just Luna. The Lovegoods are a pureblood family. And
remember how Neville, like, they went after his grandmother and it seemed like they were going to kill her?
Yeah.
So, and he's pureblood as well.
Yeah, but they also didn't kill Neville when they had the chance. I think, like, Voldemort at some point said he doesn't want to waste any more of this precious pure blood, right? Yeah, I know. Yeah. So I guess, like, to go back to it, when Luna was tortured, it may have happened, but there's no mention of torturing her, whereas Hermione was definitely tortured by Bellatrix at Malfoy Manor. And one could argue that Hermione is closer to Harry, and it was like the information that she held was more important. But you could also possibly argue that Luna is a pureblood, and even if, you know, I guess this is going a little political, but she does have that privilege, even if she doesn't, you know, wear it with pride like Draco does. And maybe that's another similarity that they have, that they're both technically purebloods, which gives them a certain protection, regardless of which side they're on.
Right. Also, I think, like, Luna's demeanor, how she's always, like, drifting off to space, kind of chilly and just not concerned with anything that's happening, it probably would not be rewarding for them to torture her. They'd probably be quite to buy it. Even when she gets, like, so a whole bunch of them get caught by the Inquisitorial squad, right? Yeah. During Umbridge time. And Luna's the only one who's not, like, fighting. She's just, like, standing there looking almost bored. So there's no reward in torturing someone that cool. She's just not bothered about it.
For sure.
So.
Okay, so now it's time for our bonus content.
Yay!
So this one is particularly important, but it's definitely bordering on us possibly creating our own fan fiction, which I think is, I think it's a great idea. We should probably think about that more. But considering Luna's capture was in Malfoy, I mean, Luna was held in Malfoy Manor, do you think that Draco and Luna actually talked to each other? And could that have been one of the reasons Draco had actually softened as a person and, you know, he didn't give Harry up immediately or in that moment? Yeah, because he does, I mean, he does, like, switch over and become a bit of an asshole later on. But maybe in that moment, because he was around probably talking to Luna so much, it may have softened him just a little, just a tad. And then, you know, her influence vanishes with her and he's back to being a dick.
I like to think so. I like the idea of Luna talking to someone who's, you know, not a very nice person like Draco. The idea that she can have an effect on him. I really like that idea. I don't really, like, how, I don't know how logical that is. They're held captive in the basement with other people, right?
Yeah.
So is this Ollivander and Luna? Is it just the two of them?
Grip hook. Grip hook,
yeah. Like, under what pretense, like Malfoy bringing them food and then talking to Luna? Because, or unless he lets her out for a bit and then, you know, they go for, like, a stroll and Luna, like, drops her nargles and blibbering humdinger knowledge on him and he feels quite relieved. The same way that he used to talk to Morning Myrtle the year before. So yeah,
oh,
I really like the idea of, I like the idea of that. I think he's also capable of it. Seeking, and she's someone who, she will listen. She will not react to him the same way that the other kids would, even though she knew that he's not a very nice person. I think Luna would still give him a chance. So yeah, I do like to think that she did have an effect on him. Although I also think that one of the main reasons why he sort of changes a little bit for the better is he does realize that the values that his father has held all this while was probably not right. Like, his conscience develops a little bit at that point. I think that's pivotal for his growth.
Yeah, and also, I mean, when it's fine to, like, talk about it, but when you have to face the reality of the horror of it, it's much more difficult to, you know, actually deal with it and actually see it happening and understand that it's very real. It's not just something you can talk about or joke about or go, my father will hear about it, because that, your father hearing about it means death for that person. But yeah, he probably underestimated how severe and harsh the whole thing can be and how brutal it is.
Oh, like how just Voldemort doesn't give a shit about anyone except himself.
Yeah.
Just that. Yeah.
Also, yeah. Like, I guess it's important to remember that they're all kids still. They're teenagers. So they probably didn't have the best understanding of what they were saying, because we all, like, talk nonsense when we're teenagers until it hits us.
That's true. I don't know if you could excuse his bullying behavior based on that. But yeah, but it definitely makes sense that, you know, he's a kid, he has some more to go and learn. Anyway,
yeah.
Moving on, I would like to talk about Luna and Neville. Do you think they dated?
Do you think, let's start with you. Like, do you think they dated?
So I think they might have, like, for a while, because, like, they were the only ones who had friends in each other, right? Like, mm-hmm. Neville didn't really have a lot of friends. Nelson didn't really have a lot of friends. So I think it's possible, mm-hmm. but I do think that in the long run, it would not have worked out, because Luna's very adventurous, and she's also really out there. Like, she has no problems going after things that don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And Neville's sort of like a hobby guy, him and his plants. You know, he's not really someone who seeks out adventure, even though towards the end, he embraces like his role in the war. And that's a really nice side to him. But I don't think like he would actively seek it out.
Yeah.
If he didn't have it. Yeah. So I think they might have dated for a while, probably at school, but not after that.
But the thing is, right, how do you think that would have gone down? Like, I don't think Neville has the ability to ask a girl out. And I don't know if Luna would have been able to, like, understand that he was asking her out. Like, how would that have even happened?
We see it in the movies, right? Like, after the war, Neville says that, you know, he's liked her for a while and he doesn't know why he hadn't asked her out. Yeah, so, I mean, I think New Neville should be New Will, right? Anyway, Neville found his, you know, ability to ask girls out, and so maybe he would have figured it out. And I don't think Luna's that dense either. I think she actually perceives a lot more than she lets on.
That's true.
So you know,
that's true.
Yeah.
Although I have like. I have pretended to not understand if I didn't want to commit or go with anyone. I would just be like, what are you talking about? Go outside where?
What? Really? And that worked?
I'm not in touch with any of those people anymore. But
it worked. All right.
So, okay. I mean.
Maybe not emulate
But it's fine. I mean, but I do think like Luna would have liked him as a person. Yeah,
I mean, he is a nice person.
He is.
And they do have things in common as well.
Yeah.
That's where
they're both kind of a different version of what's expected from their house. If you think about it, like Luna's a different kind of Ravenclaw and Neville's a different kind of Gryffindor.
For sure.
Yeah.
So that's actually a lot to go on. Like that, I think itself would, you know, give them a lot in common.
Yeah. Just kind of feeling like outsiders, which I'm sure they must.
Yeah, both of them. Yeah. Yeah. So I like to think that they did date. And that is now the law.
It's now canon.
It is. Right.
So, I guess to put one more question out there, do you think that Draco and the gang, the squad, the three musketeers of Hogwarts, if Draco and the trio were friends eventually, maybe after the Battle of Hogwarts?
Friends like who hang out and like celebrate Christmas together?
I feel like that might be pushing it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think so. Maybe they were just, I mean, if you go off base of Cursed Child, they're not really friends, but they're okay like having contact with each other. Like they work together to get their kids back from that time turner, whatever the heck that was.
Yeah, that whole nonsense.
That's bullshit. But but they were not even friendly there, were they? It was more of them just agreeing like, okay, we're going to be agreeable to each other right now because we have something to do and that's important.
Yeah.
Even then, I don't remember Draco really softening up to them or vice versa. So maybe they're just like, they acknowledge that, okay, now we're on the same side, but you know, that's just it. I don't think you can repair every friendship out there. Also, like, I recently reread the entire series, and like the first few books, it's just like, it's so hard to excuse Draco Malfoy. Even later on, like, even look back, if I was Harry, he's such a piece of shit. Like,
yeah,
you bully someone based off, like, you know, I don't know, things that's related to them. Like, if you think that, like, how people bullied Luna is like sort of the typical way that bullies behave. But Draco Malfoy, like, constantly picking on the fact that Harry's parents died and he's an orphan, like, that's not cool, man. Like, what kind of bully are you? That's just really, really mean.
Especially for a kid.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how cruel are you? And so, yeah, I don't think that, you know, they would have fixed that friendship. I think they just remained civil, you know. And I'm sure they talk shit about each other behind their backs. So,
yeah.
Single friends.
You're right. I mean, they're probably just civil to, like, get past. Also, there's, I mean, there's so much that happened. There's so much history between Draco and the trio. Like, so much. Hermione punched him once. So
he did.
Not
that I'm condoning, like, violence, but
yeah,
it was such a shit face at that point.
Yeah, but I mean, they've been through so much. There's so much history, and there's so much that you just can't move past, I guess. I doubt that you can just, you know,
forget and, like,
forget everything. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Mm. That's not a fanfic we'll be working on, but the Draco and Luna one, possibly a better version of Draco.
Yeah,
we'll fix Draco in our fanfic.
He'll be better.
Okay, so on that note, we will be ending episode one of Nerdum Say. Huge shout out to no one, because no one is sponsoring us yet, but we will be accepting any tea sponsors who would like us to be drinking their tea and would like us to be mentioning their brand. We weren't able to mention the brand we're drinking because they're not sponsoring us. we would love to mention them. But if you are a tea company, please do consider giving us some money so we can tell people about you, and also be excited about drinking your tea. I mean.
And I just want to say, I'm sorry for that. Whatever that was.
So, listeners, thank you so much for listening. You can find us on social media, on Twitter, at NerdumSayPod, and on Instagram, we are NerdumSayPodcast. You can listen to this podcast on anchor.fm, and hopefully we will be reaching Spotify and Apple Pod and Google Pod soon. We will keep you posted and we'll let you know. But till then, thank you and goodbye.